From 104.5 The Zone, this is the Midday 180. Queued up by Edley's Barbecue with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Glad you're with us. Alongside Paul Kuharski and Brentwood, I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed, the chairman of the board in Nashville. We're ready to go. Coming up, Stephen Godfrey will join us. And one question, two answers a bit later in the show, plus some Titans discussion. But we begin the hour by saying hello to Davey Shepherd of Speedway Soccer, a part of the 104.5 The Zone podcast network. Follows Nashville SC closely as they participate in the MLS. And news coming down today, as we say hello to Davey, that Nashville SC has been withdrawn from the MLS is back tournament due to 9 positive COVID-19 cases across their roster. And what is a big opportunity missed, Davey, for the local sports fan to get a glimpse of the pro soccer product in Music City?
Yeah, I think that's spot on, Hutton. We talked about it just the other day. And I think what MLS kind of banks on with their scheduling and why they go against the normal soccer calendar throughout the majority of the world is that they bank on having that open summer where the majority of professional sports are not participating. That would be the case in almost every year, but it became even more important because of COVID-19. It was going to be the only American sport kind of back rolling with the addition of the NWSL, which is soccer as well. And now Nashville loses that opportunity. So by the time they are back playing potentially in their home market, we're looking at probably mid-August, which is 5 months after they played their last game. And the Preds are most likely going to be back at that point in time. The Titans are going to be in a preseason most likely at that point in time. And so you've lost that opportunity to really have the stage to yourself. And I think that's a huge opportunity gone for this club.
The wording of their release seemed Dallas-inspired to me, was very precise in saying, despite following the protocols, despite doing, made it very clear, like, hey, we did everything right, and it just didn't work out. Do we think, look, it's kind of splitting hairs to divide the blame, but it was very clear that the league and the other members of the league were unhappy with Dallas and felt like Dallas was careless. Does the league feel like Nashville was somehow careless and brought this upon itself in some way, shape, or form? Or was Nashville's circumstance different than Dallas's?
Well, I think probably the odd thing here is that we still haven't actually heard a statement from Don Garber and MLS as to what the whole deal is. We've heard it leaked from different sources, The Athletic, Stan Stechall, some of those places. I think it's great that it got out and we know now. But I'm very interested to see how the league phrases it itself. My gut, Paul, is yes, the league does place blame on these clubs. And at the end of the day, I don't have the inside information right now. Nobody around here does. But the facts are is that 24 teams got it right and 2 got it wrong. And so maybe you did do everything right, but you would just have to say that is just a completely unbelievably bad bit of luck. Unlucky, right? Yeah. And I just, I don't know. I would say that usually doing the wrong thing leads to wrong results more than just bad luck does. So we'll hopefully get more information there.
Have they been just sitting around for a week in Orlando?
Yes, since the positives were confirmed down there, yeah, they have just been sitting around. And that's why when we talked the other day, I was saying I just there was no way they were going to play last night just because they hadn't been able to practice at all. But, you know, that's the whole thing is that Dallas and Nashville both, it seems to me that the bubble, whatever you want to call it, is working and that Nashville and Dallas both took the virus there with them. And so we'll see.
And what Hutton, never mind, have been sitting around. They're going to be sitting around, right? I mean,
well, that's the next
they're not
step
hopping
here
on a plane to come back.
Well, I wonder, like, so what's the timetable now for when we could next see Nashville SC play? Do we know that?
Well, I think it just depends on what the league tries to do. There's been rumors before Nashville that it confirmed all of these positives that maybe there would be some like a home and home series between Dallas and Nashville to try to get them some of those games because for the group stages, for those games that are played, they count towards the, quote, regular season standings, which is going to continue after this tournament. So the knockout phase won't do that, but the group stage games do. So now Nashville and Dallas are both short three, quote, regular season games. And so if you could do a home-and-home series between those two teams while the tournament's ongoing, you make up two of those three regular season games, and then you only have one to schedule for the remainder of the season. So I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happened, but that hasn't come from a league directive yet.
I wonder, Paul and Davey, I wonder if, like, because of NFL regulations, if they're going to have to find another stadium to play in if you do a home-and-home.
Oh, that's a very, very good point.
Where
very
would they go?
Very good point.
Well, in a world with no fans, you'd seem to think they could kind of go anywhere. I mean, there's I know MLB is going to have two teams of kind of free agent pools playing at the Sound Stadium, so I would think that's out. NSC at the USL level has played at Vanderbilt Soccer Stadium before. I know Vanderbilt has been making some interesting sports-related decisions lately. I'll be surprised if they have fall sports in their entirety as well at Vandy too. So we'll see what that looks like there as well.
I think that Sounds thing is done based on the reversal of phase.
Oh, is it? Okay. There you go.
I think that's dead. I'm not positive, but that's what I've heard.
So. Gotcha.
Definitely fan wise, if they were going to continue to do that, like the fan stage of having people go and watch the product at 25% capacity, that was contingent on phase four, I believe. And we're, of course, still sitting in phase two for Davidson County.
So is
the silver lining in this that they're a year closer to their new stadium anyway? Like, have we started construction on that?
You know, if you're to say that there is a silver lining, it would have to be that, right? That it's not going to be two complete full seasons inside of Nissan Stadium. But the counterpoint to that would be the only game they played at Nissan Stadium had 60,000 people there, and it looked great.
Yeah,
and so,
yeah.
Not that they were going to do that all year long, but I think there was the possibility that they carried a pretty significant fan base through that stadium. And now you've lost that opportunity for people who were going to show up and sit in the upper deck. Now that goes away. So, but yes, do they want to play in their own stadium? Of course, they want to make all that money from concessions, from the gate tax, all that stuff. And it's less time that they will go without that.
So the demo is done at the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
And they're still waiting on construction.
Yeah. So there was a ruling from the counselor who's kind of been deciding everything over the last few months in relation to the stadium. And she found that one contract to the construction company didn't give enough time for public hearing to take place. So it's not that contract has been nullified, but basically they've had to hit pause and then reopen that public hearing phase. And then it's not that there was anything wrong with the contract per se, but you just got to do things by the right way. And in this particular circumstance, they didn't. So they were on track for quarter three construction, still on track for that. It'll just be a few more weeks than it would have been otherwise.
I don't know that their operation is big enough to need streamlining, but it seems to me if a lot of other sports operations with more going on have done some streamlining, are there any jobs over there that maybe are being judged to be less important? A franchise at the start that's done some hiring and not had any income. Are there any furloughs going on over there or unfortunate job losses happening?
Nothing that we've heard publicly. I would say that knife probably cuts both ways, that the fact that they are a new franchise means that, hey, we were probably expecting not quite as much income in the front, so we were already willing to survive where other people maybe necessarily wouldn't be. But then the other side is that they're probably already running with a little bit less of an established organization that the Titans or whoever would be otherwise. So hopefully, you know, we're not going to see that because, again, just in this set of circumstances, this club is really they're treading water. You know what I mean? And I'm not saying it's any fault of their own. We don't know the truth of that yet. But they were really, really banking on the ability to be in Nissan Stadium with no other sports going on and throw a great party once a week. And people were just going to show up, have a good time and end up liking the product and come back later. That's not happening right now. And that's definitely a knife in kind of the back of this team.
Dallas and Nashville, the only two teams within the bubble that had a COVID-19 positive test?
There was one with Columbus, but I think it came back as a false positive. So everything else has been Nashville and Dallas, yeah.
It's pretty remarkable.
I know.
These stories are just depressing, and you couldn't – I mean, it's cliche to say you couldn't write them, but if you said that these teams were going to go down there and only two teams were going to have them, but they were going to have so many that they couldn't play –
yep.
And then, you know, from a Nashville perspective, you said poor little Nashville, the expansion team that really needs the games more than anybody, was going to be one of them. It would have been a hard thing to envision, and yet here we are.
Follow Speedway Soccer on Twitter at SpeedwaySOC. Go ahead, Davey. Sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say the one thing I'm interested to see over the rest of this is what happens in the middle of the tournament when a team starts. Some positives happen down there. Is a team that's in the semifinals going to get the boot? That's what I would be interested to see. And I would bet that's what Mike Jacobs was saying. Hey, as long as this applies for everybody else moving forward, we're fine with this decision. So it'll be interesting to see if that is to happen.
And now it's going to be interesting to see how they come back, you know, are guys who are testing negative, for how long do they have to test negative for them to come back? How long do the positive guys have to stay down there before they can get to a negative test to come back? And it's sure as hell they're not piling them all on a plane and bringing them back together. That's for sure.
Davey, thank you, man. Appreciate the update and always great information there. And when's the next podcast drop?
We were planning on having one recapping games this week. We'll get one out next week to talk about the first week of the tournament, chat about what's going on, and hopefully have a little more direction about what's going to be happening with NSC in that amount of time as well.
Well, I heard this morning's game was better than last night's, but not much of a start.
Hard not to be, I would say.
1045thezone.com and click on the podcast page. It's where you can find it. Davey, thank you.
Yep, take it easy,
take
guys.
Take care, bro.
Now we turn, Paul, to college football. Plenty of positive tests to go around in some of the bigger programs. And some of these programs, Clemson went through this. We're seeing this now at North Carolina, at Ohio State, where they are suspending all practices, all workouts for fall sports.
And we talked about the Ivy League yesterday with Doug, and they've scrapped the fall season, not just for football. So we may see some spring football. If you're craving football in the spring, there's going to be some level of football maybe on TV for you.
Yep. And we'll see if that's indicative for the rest of college football. Stephen Godfrey next. Midday on Eddie, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. The 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue online at edleysbbq.com. And you can download the Edley's app for some great lunch options. They also deliver through Postmates, and they still offer curbside pickup. You've got three locations, 12 Southeast Nashville and in Sylvan Park. And from Edley's Barbecue, also check out Poncho and Lefty's. Poncho and Lefty's tacos, tequila, beer. Stephen Godfrey joins us. Banner Society. You can follow him on Twitter at 38 Godfrey. What's up, man? Good to see you.
Hey, hey.
I'm good. We can walk through what we were just discussing off the air and go live, and that Hutton and I were discussing rumors, and I'm texting as we do radio, so I'm sure I'm going to sound great. It is being discussed that the Big Ten could eliminate non-conference games and move to a consolidated, bubble schedule of just playing their own schools. It is being discussed.
Okay, so in the depths of Twitter last night, I come across a retweet of the Northwestern football rivals account, and they had, and they had retweeted Tom Dienhart, who I believe writes for the Purdue website, among other things. And
he also used to work for the Big Ten.
Yes. And so
Hutton's on the dark web.
Yeah, seriously? The very dark web. And they had mentioned that there was going to be a 10-game conference-only schedule. Now, this was not worded all that well, which is why I brought it up to Godfrey during the break, because I tried to go make sure that this wasn't a fake tweet by trying to go to the source itself who was tagged, and he had not tweeted anything about this. But
right.
So if they're discussing it, they're at least contemplating, okay, we need to form the schedule so that we can make an announcement in what, 2-3 weeks? What are we going to learn about college football in the next 14 days, Godfrey?
how long they can stretch their liability until the last possible second. I feel like a broken record saying this, but because there's no centralized authority feeling, I mean, it seems like there's no centralized authority anywhere in America right now that we've been left to go in this, like, you know, parceled out. Texas is doing one thing and Florida's doing one thing. The same goes for this sport. And there's, because there's no consensus and there's no uniformity, everyone's kind of, you know, that last scene in Reservoir Dogs, everyone's got a gun up and nobody wants to be the first one to fire it. And,
yeah,
you know, we'll talk about the IVs in a second. And everyone said, well, that's it. That's the end. It's not. Everybody has different priorities here, even inside of the Power Five. The first question I have is, how are they going to handle the contracts with these schools? Okay. So off the top of my head, I'm counting. Now, remember, the Big Ten runs a 9-game schedule. That means 3 non-conference games. I'm thinking right now of mid-majors in the MAC especially and in the Sun Belt that are contracted out to go to these places. Are they going to honor those deals? They may have to, honestly. If they pull out, most of these contracts, I am not a lawyer, but most of these contracts are described to me as pay or play. All right? So if you're a program and you need that $2 million-ish that you get, are you going to get it? I'll put it this way. Alabama can live without $2 million. Appalachian State cannot. They're at Wisconsin on September 19th. I could sit here and rattle these schools off to you. I'm just going through Big Ten schedules as I'm learning about this. I think it's just going to be a discussion at this point. I don't know if they're going to pass this. Here's my second question, guys. And I just saw, I don't know if Paul saw this, that the NFL is going to do away with post-game handshakes because that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, right after you push the guy on the last snap of the game. This is funny. Like, you're in victory formation,
right,
touching each other, and yes, then as soon as the, you know, that play breaks up where the clock is running down, everybody immediately is going to distance by 6 feet. It's kind of a ridiculous concept. But nobody's calling it a ridiculous concept.
It's absolutely amazing, just because knowing a lot of football coaches, as Paul does, like, you overhear how coaches on either line teach technique, and they use a lot of phrases and words that I won't repeat on the radio. But let me just put it this way. It's an intimate amount of touching, okay? There's you're breaking that halo considerably on every single snap. So the idea that we're not going to swap jerseys is somehow going to help this process is absolutely laughable to me. So just like that, how is Wisconsin dropping a Sun Belt team, or, you know, Penn State not playing Toledo? How is that going to change anything? I don't think it is.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And as I think about, like, the Big Ten and what the schedule would look like, you could still schedule your 10, the thought would be that it's 10 games. You could still schedule, right, those 10 games over the course of a normal, like, weekly season. So you could schedule it over a 14-week span. That way you have more flexibility if you have a situation where you need to postpone a game for a later date. You can, without having to forfeit and screwing up the whole season, you know, that way, where a team advances just based on a team not being able to play their opponent that week.
My strong suspicion is this. This is being nudged on because these neutral site games, which have always been the definition of sort of largesse and greed in college football, are freaking out. Because you make money in a neutral site game in two very specific ways. You sell the broadcast rights to that event, and you package it up in a certain way where ESPN, Fox, ABC, whatever, they take it on. So I'm talking about the Chick-fil-A Kickoff Classic. I think it's just – I don't even know what it's – I think it's called the Kickoff in Arlington now at Cowboys Stadium. Same in Houston. Most of these NFL stadiums have a version of this, right? They make a large part of their nut on ticket sales, mm-hmm, and those are extremely expensive tickets. If you're a Bama fan – you know what I'm talking about. I'm just thinking regionally, locally, like Georgia fans too. Like they participate in these neutral site games a lot, right? So if you can't sell those tickets, I'll put it this way. I've been to one of those Kickoff Classics before, and it was Oklahoma State and Mississippi State to start a season. I was embedded with a coaching staff, and when those things don't sell, it's amazing to see how bad it all comes off, because you're in a giant NFL stadium. You're in a town that doesn't support either team, and nobody's there. I think those promoters are afraid of their business model collapsing in COVID, and now all of a sudden all of these non-conference deals are in jeopardy to try and create some sort of parity. I keep going back to those week one matchups. If they can't happen, what is the incentive for USC Bama? What is the incentive for Georgia and Virginia? There is no incentive, especially if other teams that are theoretically vying for a playoff spot, if they're just playing a cupcake at home in week one.
If you are... But
are they losing TV dollars out of those games?
The schools receive an individual payout from these deals. The answer is yes. It's also factored into their overall deals that they have with their current providers for what's called their tier one rights. Okay, so tier one and tier three rights are what constitutes like the SEC's deal with ESPN or the Big Ten's deal with Fox. However, individual schools will take a lump payout on top of that to go to these NFL stadiums. The theory being, in the athletic director circles, you're compensating for what would be lost home revenue, you know, by taking LSU in Wisconsin and putting it in Green Bay a couple years ago instead of putting it in Madison or Baton Rouge.
I don't know what the contract schedule is like for Notre Dame here. Like, if you're Notre Dame, can you pick up the phone, call Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, and say, hey, can we work out something where if you do a shortened season, you include the Fighting Irish amongst the schedule?
I think that, and I'm going to kind of stall in real time, what's likelier is that they would revert back to that standing agreement that they have with the ACC. Because right now, and I'm going to continue to stall as I look for their schedule, they have, and most people know this by now, they are obviously not a member of the ACC.
It's like five or six games.
Exactly. They keep an agreement to play a large portion of their schedule every year with the ACC. This was actually designed to benefit them more in the other sports, especially basketball. However, you know, some Notre Dame fans hate this as an albatross. It could save their season this year. So real fast, I'm going to do their schedule really fast. In terms of what isn't the ACC, they have Navy, which is now in Annapolis, by the way, and not Ireland, Arkansas, Western Michigan, Wisconsin, Stanford, skipping all the ACC games, and then USC. To lose all those games would be pretty significant. However, if we were to revert back to conference-only scheduling, they could bulk out and take on a Florida State. They could take on a Miami, which, you know, that actually has some historic relevance to it, and they could bolster out because the bulk of their schedule, really from October until the last week of the year, is ACC teams minus Stanford. Again, we can play these games and move the logos around, right? And I can tell you about the TV deals. Why are we doing this? What is the difference between Notre Dame playing Georgia Tech in the Falcons Stadium on November 14th and Notre Dame playing Stanford in South Bend on October 10th? What is the difference in a medical mindset? What is the difference in terms of preventing a pandemic? I don't get it.
With that in mind, do you think we're more likely in these scenarios? Are commissioners more likely to get together, ADs more likely to get together and say, we want to play the full season in the spring as opposed to a shortened season in the fall? Which would do you think those minds in Division I football would prefer? And now let's tie in what the Ivy League has announced.
Well, so the Ivies, you know, everyone kind of jumped the gun, I think. When the Ivies announced that they were moving to spring, it's because I think almost all those campuses are going online only. Which, so by the way, if you can spend $51,000 a year, you can take online classes at Harvard now. but
crazy.
The Ivies are largely they are a self-contained entity, right? They are also geographically very tight together. This makes sense. But the reason it makes the most sense is not that of their schedule. It's not anything to do with the education. It's everything to do with the fact that they don't have $1 billion wrapped up in a television deal, okay? I think my employer, I don't even know what our status is anymore. At one time we were under the Comcast umbrella. And they had NBC has the rights to the Ivies. If nothing else, and I'm not telling a joke here, this becomes the XFL for college football if they kick off in, what, February and run till April? And what I mean by that is it becomes a secondary diversion if all of the rest of the football product is cycled out the same way the XFL. I want to pay them a compliment here because there are a lot of young assistants right now schematically in the Ivies that are becoming trendsetters. I mean, you look no further than Oklahoma State. I think they've hired now two of these guys. Like, you will see good, creative, interesting football. It will not have the highest skill level. It will be a watchable product. That's great. That's fun. Let's watch Ivy. I'll watch Harvard play Yale in February. This is not going to factor into the decision making in Birmingham or Chicago. It is just not.
Here's a question Hutton raised earlier, going backwards. I don't know how many games are scheduled to be played in NFL stadiums by colleges. I would think the NFL would have no interest in anybody else coming into their locker room,
right,
or being on their field or using any of their facilities whatsoever. Do you imagine any of those games, every one of those games being off the books?
Well, Paul, let's do this really fast just because I used an example already. The NFL schedule is out. So I said November 14th. This is a great example of how college football works. It was more lucrative for Notre Dame to go to Georgia Tech and say, instead of going to Bobby Dodd, why don't we move this into Mercedes-Benz, right?
Yeah.
So we'll go, yeah, I think it's like 2 miles. Okay.
That game's not happening.
It is, I'm looking really fast, sandwiched between home games for the Falcons. I don't believe it's on the same date. Did I say it was the 16th, 17th, 18th? So the Falcons are on the road, but your point stands is that, I'm going to just do this again.
Yeah, they're not going to want them in there. The league's not going to want them in there. The Falcons aren't going to want them in there.
So that's just one example I can think of really fast. I can go through every NFL team that has an indoor facility in the warm weather parts of America. I mean, so Mercedes alone is scheduled to have two games on Labor Day weekend. That would be ostensibly that's scheduled around Atlanta's preseason. All right. Houston has two games that I know of. All right. Dallas has two games that I know of, and this is just without even looking at the schedule. I mean, I know there's more out there, but on the spot, I can name 6-7 of these games, okay? As we go, how in the world is the league going to figure out what the liability is on this, right? Because I know the bigger concerns in the pro circles right now is limiting liability because the labor force is compensated and you can go to the players' union, right? But if you cannot guarantee a secure space because of a standing third-party agreement with one of your facilities and an outside vendor. So to an NFL team, it's the same as if we rented out Nissan Stadium for monster trucks as it is if we rented it out for Western Kentucky to play. It doesn't matter, right?
It might be worse because the monster trucks probably aren't filling every locker stall the way another football event is.
Exactly. And again, though, every time you see a college game move to an NFL stadium that is not the playoff, that is for ticket sales. Okay, more so than regular college football. I'm not saying there isn't a television element to Notre Dame playing Georgia Tech, but when you move it to a bigger facility, it's always to increase your gate. I don't know what gate are you gonna get.
As we wrap up our weekly discussion with Godfrey, Steve, I want to get your take on what Vanderbilt's doing. With the decision of Vanderbilt University to absorb its athletics communications department into the university itself, which has been very guarded in how they want to separate academics and athletics, your thoughts as you saw this reported earlier this week that those within the athletics communications department were being absorbed by the university and they would have to reapply for those same positions.
I don't understand what's going on here at all. And I just wanted to say that this makes absolutely no sense to me. This is a Power Five program. It's where I live. I've made these jokes before with Chad a lot about, hey, you know, I would love it if Vanderbilt was an undefeated program. I wouldn't have to leave the house, you know, all those things.
Yeah.
I just want to qualify what I'm about to say. I do not understand what this program is doing. I have not understood what this program has done for about 20 years now, as long as I've been doing this professionally. This is a program that continues to sit upon potential and squander it in new and creative ways. And what I'm not saying that, you know, if you want to shrink your comms staff, and for those of you listening, you don't know what that is, it's all the people who basically help the media and create the stories that you click on the team's official site. And, you know, they help radio, they help television. We all know these people because
it's the messaging. They control the messaging. Yeah.
They control the messaging, and then they also work with us and they play kind of the PR game. I know Alan George is a great guy. We talk frequently. I don't understand what the model that they're trying to create here. Are they trying to emulate someone else? I don't get that. We often talk about Derek Mason, whether or not he's in or he's out. This is yet another reason, and I'm not pro or con on Derek Mason. This is yet another reason why I tell people, don't evaluate this coaching staff, because I'm going to be honest with you. Go out and get a red hot coach if you could. Right. Go out and get the next guy. Go somehow get Luke Fickell or Billy Napier or one of these red hot young coaches that you think would fix this. I guarantee you, if you introduce them into this situation, you would not see a different result. And the bottom line is this: those coaches wouldn't touch this SEC job for all the money in the world. The reason why is they believe systemically that it is flawed. We have to actually, if you're Vanderbilt, how much longer can you bait people into believing that you're making a concerted effort at this? This is what I don't understand.
Who's believing that except the old blue bloods maybe who are hypnotized and dedicated?
They hold the throttle. I think, Paul, that's the thing, though, is that they hold the throttle in a way in which you just don't see culturally in any other SEC area. Because, you know, there's plenty of quote-unquote blue bloods in Baton Rouge and Tuscaloosa, okay? Some seriously old, rich people who make things happen. But they sure as hell wouldn't tolerate this if they weren't winning football games.
Yeah, but their kids are going to be in it too. As I say about Vanderbilt over and over, these people are going to die and relatively soon, and their kids aren't in it the same way.
Paul, you're exactly right, because during the height of the Franklin era, you did not see a cultural adjustment to being a football community. And so what I mean by that is one of the things Stanford did so smartly was, as Harbaugh and Shaw built that thing, and Andrew Luck is you know, you got Andrew Luck, you got McCaffrey, you got all these star names, right? They recreated a football culture from other places that they had been, and really kind of built in like a Michigan vibe at Stanford, okay? So now you have young venture capitalists who are worth $100 million who are writing checks to football. What has Vanderbilt done? We are in Nashville, Tennessee. How the hell does this keep happening?
It's brutal.
Right there with you, man. Stephen Godfrey has been our guest. Always great college football discussion whenever he joins us. As Chad likes to say, it is Adderall added to our show. It is college football on Adderall.
So good.
Thank you, man. Appreciate you. We'll be checking out the Twitter feed at 38 Godfrey.
All right. Love y'all. See you next week.
Take care, brother.
Always great there with Godfrey. Coming up, Paul, all of this talk and looking outside in to the bubble that the MLS has tried to create with the MLS's back tournament and what's happened with at least two of their pro franchises so far, including Nashville. I think it's a sign that the NFL should think twice about holding any preseason games. And I'll explain a little bit deeper next here on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Paul Reed, chime in on this, because as I have been reading through and watching the coverage of the MLS trying to get back within their bubble, the NBA's having some struggles as well with certain organizations. If I'm the NFL right now, as much as I would love to have a few run-throughs with protocol and travel and making sure that the product is polished a bit to where the product in week one looks decent, I'm scrapping all preseason games.
You'll take a chance.
Yeah, but because it takes one player to bring it to the locker room, or one player to have a false negative And then you think everything's okay, so he can make the trip. Or everything's okay, so he gets back in the locker room. You're socially distanced, but again, we talked with Bill Schaffner yesterday. Dr. Schaffner told us, like, you can be further than 6 feet away from someone and still contract this virus through aerosols. So with all the precautions that you could take, you're then going to take that risk in a preseason meaningless football game, which would otherwise give you an extra month to analyze data, to prepare for week one, where the money starts to flow with these TV contracts and where the players actually get weekly checks. I'm scrapping the preseason games for this reason.
It's hard to argue against what you're saying, and it's hard. I think, you know, what do you say to a player who says, look, I'm not even being paid for this preseason game, and you want to take me on the road, you want to take us on the road for an operational test? Yes, for some football that will have some meaning, but largely, you know, what would you call it? 50-50? It's a football experiment, but it's also an operational experiment.
Well, here's and also I'm not what I'm paid. Considering. If I'm an organization, and I'll just use Sean McVay as the example, because Sean McVay has told us what he thinks of the preseason by not playing any starters in any game last year. I'm not even traveling my starters.
He would leave them at home.
Yeah. I'm just taking the guys that I need to evaluate, and I'm making sure that Jared Goff and my offense and defense, you know, that Aaron Donald, that they're healthy for week one.
And then doesn't that create some
it's a locker smart room play.
Division? Doesn't that create some locker room division? Maybe. Like, hey, you're willing to sacrifice me to COVID. It's okay if I come on this trip to where the Titans scheduled to go, to Tampa Bay. You're willing to take me to Tampa Bay and put me at risk, but you're leaving the guy one spot ahead of me on the depth chart. You're leaving him at home. You know, listen, I understand the depth chart, but we are a united locker room, but we're not a united locker room when it comes to you exposing me to COVID. I'm sacrificable, but he's not. And that's not a healthy locker room dynamic. Players know, sure, but it's still not a healthy thing. Hey, bye. I'll see you back at the facility where you're safe and not getting the virus while I go to maybe get the virus. We'll see you when we get back, unless I'm quarantined.
Yeah, but the difference is those guys take that trade for the opportunity to make a roster.
Right, but is that what? Listen to what we're talking about. I'm trading off a chance to make the roster in exchange for going to get something that may screw up my lungs. You guys have a good time. Watching me play.
But every league's doing that.
No, I know. But this is where we are. It's a dangerous spot. I mean, I'm not going with the the virus going to kill you thing. But there are some people.
I know what you're saying. Well. But my overall thought, though, is just get to week one. And even if week one is pushed back a few weeks, like start the season at some point. Solidify the idea that you're actually going to kick off week one of the regular season. And again, I'm not saying that has to be September 10th on that Thursday night. You can move it back. But by starting training camp and starting the preseason and playing games, we're seeing what's happening with the NBA, with Major League Baseball, with testing being delayed. If testing is delayed over July 4th, testing will be delayed over Labor Day weekend. I can guarantee you that.
NFL will have a workaround.
And everything else involved with what we're seeing with MLS, people are going to test positive. When players have returned for workouts at universities, we're seeing that at Ohio State. We're seeing that at Clemson in large numbers. Players are going to test positive. You're going to have that at your facility and in your locker room, no matter the measures that you take. So why not just be a little bit more patient with it instead of pushing the issue in a meaningless preseason game? I was on board with playing a couple of games because, again, I want the product to be as good as it can, but I'm also going to lean towards ensuring that the product is on the field in September and October, if possible.
And you know what Tom Brady's going to say to this? He's going to say, I told you so about these practices that I arranged. because any little bit you could do to get ahead to assure that you're going to look better on opening day, where that win is going to count just as much as any. And quite frankly, if we have a shortened season, it might count more. We did what we had to do to get there, be it right or wrong, against the advice of the league and against the advice of the PA. I don't give a damn. I got my throws in. I got my center to get his towel where I needed it and all of that stuff. And the guys who were law-abiding citizens will, if there were some, and we don't know what was going on in secret and not, will suffer the consequences to some degree.
Yeah, but I do think that there are a lot more players that are doing exactly what the Buccaneers are doing.
Smartly in secret. Smartly in secret.
Well, also in secret because they're not Tom Brady.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like the eyeballs are not on them the same way that we're seeing in Tampa.
But look, Nashville and Dallas in MLS were not trying to do anything nearly as complicated as an NFL team going on the road will be trying to do in terms of size and scope, in terms of there having been some contact in practice ahead of time, et cetera, correct?
Yeah.
So outside of your being more patient, and we don't know that things are going to necessarily get better. We hope they will. Somebody's doomed. There's going to be a Nashville and there's going to be a Dallas in this deal.
Right.
And are they going to, if you've got two withdrawals out of the NFL, what are we getting? Bye weeks and forfeits?
Well, if you're trying to avoid what has been inevitable for many college football programs, and again, the testing is working, like their setup is working where they're finding the positive test, but they have so many in a short span that they just shut it down, right? And when I say shut it down, they press pause on what they're doing to try to get the numbers down before they resume. If you're trying to avoid that in the NFL, you don't avoid it by traveling to preseason games. At least I don't think so. And the starters aren't even going to, many of the starters won't even travel. You wouldn't put them through that.
Complicated, complicated, complicated. And for these guys who, the operations people, for the facilities directors, for all the people charged with making things as safe as possible, I think you're fighting upstream. At least some of you are, and you can do a great job, or maybe you do a job where there's one slip or one thing happens, and you're going to get a bad result despite the work that you do.
If you missed the start of the show, and if you want some further details, if you did catch the story, some further details of what happened with PK yesterday, he did not do this to someone, or he did not do this to himself. He did this to something. He de-pantsed something.
Criminal act.
Next on 104.5 The Zone.